Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And I'm your host, Assumpta Latus. Good morning and welcome to the program. Coming up, Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari is confident that he will defeat Boko Haram.
If we have been listening hard enough, or if you have been to Northeast, the military is really gaining ground, and Boko Haram is virtually limited.
Former Chadian dictator Hissène Habré has been forced into court after refusing to attend the resumption of his trial.
At the end of the day, if he is found guilty, even if he has refused to comply with it, then he will have to be jailed if they find him guilty and they pass a jail sentence on him.
We will also be having a report on how a chukudu, a handmade wooden scooter, is helping in moving people and things in Goma, Eastern DRC.
Top story.
Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has said great strides have been made in the fight against Boko Haram. He said that on Monday while in Ghana, where he met his counterpart John Dramani Mahama. The two have agreed to intensify cooperation between intelligence agencies and efforts to improve electricity supply in two countries. As our correspondent Isaac Kaleji reports from Accra, Buhari is particularly seeking support in the fight against Boko Haram.
Mr. Buhari is visiting Accra a little over 100 days after winning a crucial election in his country. He spent less than 10 hours in the Ghanaian capital, Accra, holding closed-door meetings with his counterpart, President Mahama. Both leaders discussed issues of security in the sub-region, efforts at improving electricity supply in both countries, and trade-related matters. Ghana's President Mahama described the conversation that took place between the two leaders as productive.
Ghana has also agreed to continue to work with Nigeria to guarantee the security and socio-economic prosperity of our two people. As the immediate past chair of ECOWAS, I also reviewed with President Buhari the progress of the fight against the Boko Haram insurgents and conveyed to him my personal commendation and that of the sub-region for the quick response and his active deployment of military power to help with the fight against the insurgents.
Mr. Buhari visited Ghana at a time when his country is struggling to fight the war against the militant group Boko Haram. Over 100 Chibok girls are yet to be located and rescued. Hope looks faint for these girls, and the Nigerian leader hopes countries like Ghana can aid in intelligence gathering.
Firstly, to reorganize the military, and a clear terms of reference was drawn and led over to them in terms of retraining, re-equipping, and redeploying the troops. And I think if we have been listening hard enough, or if you have been to Northeast, the military is really gaining ground, and Boko Haram is virtually limited.
Mr. Buhari met the Nigerian community living in Ghana before his departure from Accra. Discussions focused on reassuring them of fixing the problems of Africa's populous nation. But these Nigerians in Ghana expect more.
He has not really done anything for our country. Ever since he moved in, the exchange rate has been increasing. Dollar is now very expensive. And not only that, the economy has become very bad. It's now worse.
So far, I don't think of recent any other president has done some stuff he has done now. Like, I heard they've done some refineries, but they've not been started yet. And in general, his fight against corruption, I think he's doing also a great job there.
From the look of things, he's making research, visiting some countries to help him, to aid him fight the Boko Haram. So he's trying.
Nigeria's president will now return home knowing Ghanaians back Nigeria to succeed, and he will be the main man championing that cause.
That was Isaac Kaleji reporting. Now, this is not President Buhari's first visit within the region. In July, he visited Cameroon in an effort to calm fractious ties between the West African neighbors and strengthen cooperation against Islamist militant group Boko Haram. My colleague Jane Ayeko Kumet has been speaking to a Ghanaian political analyst, Richard Amoako Ba, about the significance of the current visit.
very, very important, but I would say it's more important for Ghana than Nigeria. Nigeria having a bigger economy, Ghana relies on Nigeria, for example, for supply of gas for its electricity production. It is also important for Nigeria for several reasons. Don't forget, Mahama, Ghana's president, was instrumental in bringing about a peaceful election in Nigeria. So it is Nigeria's president's turn to impress upon the Ghanaian president to also work hard to bring about peaceful election in Ghana.
How can you describe the current bilateral relations between Nigeria and Ghana?
Well, since Buhari just assumed the reins of authority in Nigeria, it's quite new, but Ghana's relationship with Nigeria has been a strong one and growing every year, especially with respect to, I can tell you, unofficially, Ghanaian political parties, especially the two main ones, get some support from Nigeria, unofficially, of course. But aside from that, trade relations, energy, especially gas from Nigeria, is critical for the survival of Ghana's industry. There's one area here, corruption. Of course, you see that already Buhari has made a name for himself for fighting corruption in Nigeria. And I have no doubt at all, the headlines on some of our local internet news outlets says that he's here to talk about looted Nigerian money deposited in Ghana. And so maybe he's looking for cooperation with the Ghanaian government so that these monies could be repatriated back to Nigeria.
One of the key issues that the two leaders addressed was security. What role do you think Ghana could play in regional efforts to fight Boko Haram?
Well, of course, Ghana is not on the direct forefront of the fight against Boko Haram, but not too far. I don't think any country in West Africa should be complacent. And so if for nothing at all, they could exchange intelligence. Don't forget Ghana, Burkina Faso, Niger. Boko Haram roams about in the desert area. And so any government in the sub-region can help Nigeria's fight against Boko Haram.
In areas of trade and investments, both Nigerian and Ghanaian businesses operating from each other's terrain are confronted with challenges like high license fees. How best can the two countries address these trade barriers that are impediment to economic growth?
Well, there is this problem. Nigeria's economy is way too big for Ghana to allow direct competition like that. They will swallow up almost every industry in Ghana. So the complaint has been the impediments in the way of business trade, business relationship. We in Ghana, we're just a small country. I tell you, the city of Lagos population, 24 million, is the same as the whole country's population in Ghana. And that can, you can put things in perspective that way. And this is why sometimes the government on the smaller countryside put the brakes on, don't open it too much for Nigeria, otherwise we'll be in trouble.
Richard Amoako Ba speaking to Jen Ayeko Kumet. You're listening to Deutsche Welle's Africa Link with me, Assumpta Latus.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Now, the trial of Chad's former dictator Hissène Habré took a dramatic turn as the accused refused to come to court. Court was adjourned and the judge ordered Habré to be brought in by force. Habré, who is accused of war crimes and crimes against humanity, has repeatedly refused to recognize the court, calling it imperialist. During his first trial in July, he described the trial as a masquerade. For more on the trial, Jen Ayeko Kumet has been speaking to Celeste Hicks, a freelance journalist who has been following the trial closely from Morocco.
The scene was quite chaotic. As you said, Hissène Habré had to be held down by the security officers. There was a lot of shouting in the court. Hissène Habré's supporters were there chanting, asking for him to be the trial to end, denouncing the trial. Hissène Habré himself was shouting, "Shut up," at the judge at some points, which is really quite extraordinary when you think about it. But eventually things calmed down and the trial was eventually able to continue in the afternoon.
Following the events of today's hearing, what steps is the court going to take?
Well, the next thing that needs to be decided is if the court can go ahead without Habré having a defence team. As you know, in a trial, the accused should always be able to have a defence. And Hissène Habré, first of all, dismissed his own defence team when the trial opened in July. And then after today, he also refused to cooperate with the court-appointed trial team, which was supposed to be conducting his defence. So now the court needs to decide if it can effectively go ahead against his will, that's to say, to try him without him having any kind of defence.
Since Habré does not recognize the court as well, he will probably not accept any judgment passed on him. In the event that he does not accept his sentence, what will happen?
I think it's almost inevitable that Habré is going to just continue to denounce this process, refuse to cooperate in all aspects of it. Probably he will either refuse to speak or he just won't turn up and they'll have to repeat today's exercise of actually physically carrying him into the court. But I mean, at the end of the day, if he is found guilty, even if he has refused to comply with the court, if the court can prove that they've given him a fair chance to defend himself and he refused to accept that, then he will have to be jailed if they find him guilty and they pass a jail sentence on him.
Now, the names of the witnesses were read in court. Considering that Habré still has some supporters, some of whom were actually in court during the hearing, does this not present a threat to these people? And if so, are there any measures to protect the witnesses from being attacked by his supporters?
I think that the victims are fairly safe, actually, in the court. When it comes to what happens post-trial, I'm not aware of there being any measures in place to protect witnesses afterwards.
Now, just to get back to today's trial, after that incident and the trial, certainly then when things calmed down, the trial continued. How did it end?
The trial this afternoon resumed with the charges against Habré being read out, and Habré stayed in the dock with the Senegalese security forces. And then everybody's waiting for tomorrow to see whether it will resume again in the morning.
Celeste Hicks, a freelance journalist who has been researching on Chad and the Sahel region.
Africa on the move.
In Africa on the move this week, we go to Goma in eastern DRC and hear about a chukudu, a handmade wooden scooter. And this is how it looks like. Two rubber-covered wheels are connected by a board with a steering handle atop an upside-down fork. Despite its old appearance, a chukudu goes amazingly fast and can carry heavy loads. A chukudu owner can earn up to $10 a day, and it's good money to make in one of the poorest countries in the world. This report by Jan-Philip Scholz and Adrian Krisch is now presented by Fred Muvunyi.
Chukudus are a familiar sight in Goma, in most cases carrying heavy loads on the most rubber-covered roads of the town near Kivu in eastern DRC. The chukudu is made of durable wood and it takes patient craftsmanship to construct a good one. Sebastian Pascal says he learned the craft of making the wooden scooters from his father. He charges $100 for a chukudu.
It's pretty hard work. The most difficult part is whittling everything down so that the parts fit together.
Almost all the parts that make up the chukudu come from the region. Pascal says he and his colleagues usually take up to 3 days to finish one chukudu. Only then is it ready to roar. It transports not only people, but staggering loads of just about anything. In downtown Goma, a statue of a man riding on a chukudu has been erected in honor of this prized means of transportation. Residents of Goma said the wooden scooter has become a symbol of pride for the city.
We didn't used to have motorcycles, but we had the chukundu to help us transport goods. It was invented here in Goma. That's why we have this statue.
This chukundu reflects Goma's image. It symbolizes our city, and that makes us happy.
It shows how they have to work so hard just to end their life here in Goma.
After hard day's work, Sebastian Pascal has just returned home to his family. His sister says she's proud of the hard-working chukudu constructor.
We now have enough to eat and to send the kids to school.
Pascal is convinced that hard work is the only way forward in crisis-ridden Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. And so the following day, he's on the road again, pouring new wood for the next chukudu.
Fred Muvunyi presenting that report on chukudu.
For more about Africa Link, go to dw.com/AfricaLink. Find out about Africa Link's partner stations. Send us your feedback in a text message and sign up for our newsletter, dw.com/AfricaLink.
Let's go to Berlin now, where the first German-African Business Summit is taking place. It has attracted Germany's business and political dignitaries, including the country's Minister for Foreign Affairs, Sigmar Gabriel. To know the focus of the meeting, Jen Ayeko-Kumet turned to DW's Julia Han, who participated in the first day of the summit.
Well, I think this summit is trying to send a clear message. A lot of decision makers in German politics and in the business and banking sector, they don't see the continent anymore as a continent of crisis and conflict, but as a continent of opportunities and chances. Africa, according to them, is rising, and Germany should be part of that, actually. And in this, they are fully supported by all the African guests, African businessmen and business women. And as one representative of the East African community put it, for example, he said, if you want to stick to the status quo, stay where you are, stay in Europe, but if you want to invest in the future, you have to come to Africa. A lot of numbers were cited. For example, 6 out of the 10 fastest growing economies worldwide are located in Africa. Ethiopia, for example, the DRC, Chad, Cameroon, and they have growth rates between 5 and up to 10%, which are, of course, impressive to Germany.
German entrepreneurs are known not to be so willing to invest in Africa. Do you think this time round something is going to change? And if so, why now?
I think we have to look at why German investors have not been willing so much to invest in Africa. Well, there are thousands of people dying in violent conflict. There is 1 in 4 people in Africa still suffering malnutrition. There is still a lot of corruption in many countries on the continent. So German investors put a high emphasis on security, according to what they say. They want a secure investment environment. They want low corruption. They want to invest in countries that are also regionally integrated. For example, Rwanda, which is quite integrated into the East African community, which offers, of course, a larger market than just this single country, Rwanda.
What can German entrepreneurs offer that other countries have not already done?
Well, that's quite a good question. If you'd ask a businessman or a business woman in Germany, they probably answer that they can offer quality, expertise, and long-term commitments. That's what they always emphasize. They, of course, know that China, for example, Chinese investors are on the continent for quite some time already and that they have done business there. But I think Germans want to take their time, and they think it's also necessary to take this time.
You're just talking about German investors taking time. Isn't it then too late, considering the massive penetration of the Chinese, as you've just mentioned, as well as other countries, probably from the Asian region, from the Arab area? They're all in Africa. Isn't it too late for the Germans?
Well, probably a lot of people would say so. And I think to some extent, this is right. But if you ask business people, they are just getting started. I think they will find their ways. And they are so convinced that there is a lot more to do in Africa in the next years. And the market is not saturated yet. And there are chances and opportunities. I think Germans now need to get some speed in their plans and try to make them work.
Julia Hahn speaking from Berlin.
Making a difference.
In Making a Difference this week, we go to South Africa's city of Port Elizabeth and we meet Sana Liziwe Dick, a 17-year-old changemaker from Nelson Mandela Bay. Together with like-minded friends, she started the Youth for Safer Communities, YSC, a group of dedicated pupils that actively engages with peers to prevent violence and create safer environment for young people in Port Elizabeth. Sana Liziwe is also the editor-in-chief of a youth magazine, Woma. This report by Stefan Moll is now presented by Happiness Matanji.
With almost 36 murders per 100,000 residents annually, Port Elizabeth is seen as the second most violent city in South Africa. Although the situation has slightly improved over the past few years, the recent wave of xenophobic attacks in South Africa is a distressing reminder that the high level of violence is a major obstacle for the country's development. Denied the chance to grow up with a positive vision of the future and see themselves as the productive within their communities, young people in a township such as Woma, a township in Port Elizabeth, are often driven into a cycle of violence and criminality. This violence claimed one of her friends, and once a week the schoolgirl visits the grave of her friend Cindy, who was brutally raped and murdered 2 years ago.
It's a feeling of mixed emotions because now it's my first time here after the burial. I was last year at the burial. Back then we were still in shock because we didn't expect it. I think now it has sunk in that we may never see Cindy again. Maybe we'll see her in the afterlife.
Living in Woma is a challenging because of the high poverty levels and unemployment. Young people find themselves not only the victims, but also the perpetrators of violence.
Because most of them work in gangs, so if you want to fit in, you go into this gang and then you do all sorts of wrong stuff because you just want to fit in. And then, of course, unemployment also has a major role to play and poverty.
Sana Liziwe Dick wants young people to take responsibility and take action for a healthy environment, such as renovating a rundown classroom. With such positive contribution, their next move is to visit the mayor of Nelson Bay Municipality, Dan Jordan. While there, the group present their proposals for a safer city to the mayor.
Now, the first issue was that not everyone contributes in the creation of safer spaces. People feel that it's the job of the government or the police, whereas it's a shared responsibility.
After laying out their plans, the mayor was impressed.
I'm very encouraged, both by their own stories of what they want to pursue in future, as well as the kind of society and communities that they want to see in the metro.
Together with her friends and Masifunde, she will make sure that young people have their say about the future of Nelson Mandela Bay.
Happiness Matanji with that report by Stefan Moll. Now, a summary of what we have been covering. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari is confident in defeating Boko Haram, but acknowledges more time is needed to curb the insurgency. Former Chadian dictator Hissène Habré has been forcefully carried into court after adamantly refusing to attend the resumption of his trial. And we have also been hearing about a 17-year-old who is fighting violence in South Africa. We'd love to hear what you think about our program. If you have comments, please don't hesitate to send it to our email address, which is feedback.africa@dw.com, to our postal address, Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or send us a text message to +49 160 9575 9510. That's how we wrap up this program for today. Until tomorrow, I'm Assumpta Latus. Thanks for listening.